Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. Dave is off this week, but I guess first, happy New Year's to everybody. Hope everyone had a good, restful time over the holidays and are ready to get back at it here in the new year. This week, I'm joined by a good friend, Benedict Dyka of UserList. Benedict, how's it going?
Hey, nice to be here. Yeah, everything all right over here.
Great, great. Yeah, so I know it's an interesting time right after the new year. I know we all go into the end of the year thinking about what we did last year and the beginning of the year, thinking about all the great stuff we're going to do this year. And so, yeah, I guess I thought, you know, for folks who kind of don't know you or what you're up to, you want to give a bit of kind of background on who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so as you said, my name's Benedict. I'm a software developer by trade, studied in university and stuff like that. I've been doing a lot of consulting work, mainly helping software founders building their products. But now it's like 2 years ago, I co-founded a new product, UserList, userlist.com, together with Jane Portman and Claire Solentrop. And we basically do lifecycle messaging / email for SaaS products. And we've been doing this for quite a while now. And 2019 was a big milestone for us because we finally finished the product, air quotes, and launched it. So this was definitely the highlight of my 2019.
Yeah, nice. Well, that's good to be able to point back at like a thing that kind of made 2019 for you. We were talking about this with our family and our kids about like, hey, what do you think about when you think about last year? And our kids, of course, had like silly, oh, I got this toy for Christmas kind of things. And for me, I was like, I don't know. There was so much shit that happened. I don't even know like where to point. So that's great that you have a thing. That's super.
So there's not just one thing that stands out for you?
No, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that happened, right? But I mean, I guess like for us, like with Castos, which is like my big priority right now, like joining Tiny Seed was a really big deal. You know, taking someone else's money, being accountable to them changed just a lot of how I work and how I think about work. So I think that really frames a lot of my life and my work life specifically. But that's, I don't know if that's an accomplishment. I guess it's an accomplishment. I don't know. That's a weird way to think about it.
But. Yeah, I think that counts as an accomplishment. I mean, it's not like everyone gets in there and it's kind of stamp of approval a little bit. So
yeah, I think you can be proud of that. I think so. Yeah. And honestly, I mean, and this is kind of something that the episode that we're going to talk about today is going to be kind of like, I think we'll call it something like doing it better the second time around. So Benedict and I are just going to kind of chat through things we've learned through you know, building products for customers and now building products for yourself. And I know this is like the second SaaS product you've built for kind of yourself. And for me, kind of now looking back 2.5 years into Castos, like what I've learned and what I maybe wish I would have done different. And next time I go do this, if I do it again, what I'll do differently. Because I mean, we learn a lot. And I think the nice part is a lot of it is fixable even as you go. But one of the things that we've learned recently is like, we spend a non-trivial amount of time redoing stuff now. And that really chaps my ass because I say like, maybe it's my fault, you know, that like I pushed too hard and that we did this, you know, not in a perfect way the first time, but then having to go back and redo the whole thing is kind of painful. So I don't know. Do you find like you build an initial version of something, but then you have to go back in 6 months to refactor it or update it or something like that?
Yeah, it happens. And I'm usually quite worried about that up front. Like whenever I build a new thing, I sometimes get really stuck with like weighing all the options and possible solutions and trying to find the best one. So I feel like nowadays I'm almost on the opposite spectrum of that, just like worrying too much and getting stuck and not shipping stuff because of that. So I sometimes have to remind myself that just getting something out there is more valuable than finding the perfect solution.
Yeah. How is that dynamic between you and Jane? Because I know Jane's a designer, so you're very fortunate. You get like a beautiful mock-up to build every time. That's very fortunate. But how is that dynamic of like shipping and speed versus quality for you guys?
So I think Jane is always a lot faster with the designs than I am with the actual code.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a little bit different, but that's usually because I've been planning to implement certain stuff over a longer period, and I can just ship it quickly because of the groundwork that's already in place. But I think you mentioned this on previous episodes as well. Product development is always kind of the bottleneck. At least it feels that way. And I constantly feel like I'm the bottleneck and way too slow with development.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that the product was, quote, done last year, right? But, like, it's never done, right?
And, yeah, and it's so never done.
I think you can, when you feel like the product is done, and we feel like the product is done too, but we still have two full-time developers working on it all the time. How do you feel about, like, how do you guys balance, like, bug fixes and feature development? Because I think that's an interesting thing that we all struggle with.
So depending on like how serious the issue is, bugs usually come first when it's like a deal breaker for a customer, like something breaks for them or stuff like that. Then that usually stops feature development and we go back into fixing it. If it's something that's like just a tiny issue in the sense that it's not really a problem, but maybe not super nice, like a small UI issue or something like that, then that usually sits in the bug tracker for a while, and then when I have time, I usually go in there and just fix a bunch of stuff in one session. All those small little things that just like improve the overall quality of the product. But yeah, as I said, like major features always get priority. Major issues always get priority.
Yeah, we tend to work the same way, and I think it's a matter of like what's a major issue for us. It's like billing is always a big one. Those ones, ability to publish a podcast episode or to get analytics, and for you guys to be able to send an email or tag somebody properly. Everything else, basically, all the UI stuff gets pushed in the back burner. We typically fix those all like once a month is kind of how we're working. We're going to be doing the Basecamp shape up kind of cycles here going into 2020. So we're going to have 6-week kind of on cycles where we just say, what can we fit into these six-week period, and then take 2 weeks for kind of cleanup, and that'll be mostly bug fixes and refactor, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach overall. Just like have some dedicated time to actually go back in there and fix stuff or improve small things from time to time, because otherwise, if you're just always focusing on your features, stuff gets left behind and usually bites you a year after or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely swung way too far that way, maybe the beginning of last year. And there was just some ugly, bad stuff that we worked around for too long. But cool. So I think we both have a list of like solid tactical things that we have learned that we're hopefully doing better this time, or maybe we just learned that we would do better next time. And I think this would be a cool episode for folks who are, well, anybody, for somebody who's just getting started in SaaS or that is, starting something new or whatever. Do you, Benedict, do you want to go first with something that you kind of have learned that you're hoping to do better?
Yeah, of course. I have to put out a small disclaimer with all of this. For one, like this is the first time I actually have co-founders, which changes a lot of things, just like by the nature of having someone else work on this with me versus like building my own product or being hired to build something. And the other one is... I never made it this far with any other project. So Userless definitely is the most successful product I've built so far, at least for myself.
Yeah.
So that also, I mean, now I'm doing stuff that wasn't even an option back with other projects because I don't had a need for it or it was dead from the start. So
that's cool. No, that's great. I mean, yeah. So that's really like advanced learning then. That's super. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I think one of the first things I'm quite happy about is like actually having co-founders. Like making that decision to team up with someone was definitely an improvement to trying to do it alone with my first product, which was a content management system for musicians and band websites. So I was working on that project alone, and now with having both Claire and Jane on the team, it's just so great that there's always some progress, even if I'm not actively working on it, because I'm, I don't know, working on a consulting project or something like that. just having a team there that pushes things forward when you're not working on it is a great, great thing.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. So I've never had a co-founder. It would be a big deal for me, like personally. I don't know if my personality is conducive to that, but like everything you read is that it's better, right? And places like Y Combinator and even Tiny Seed really want to have co-founder groups and for their companies because they're just more productive by more than, you know, you're more than two times productive if you have a co-founder, I think, as a team. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure if it has to be a co-founder. Like, I think just having a team is a big thing, but like early on, having a co-founder is usually the only way you can afford having a team, I guess.
Yeah. 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 I'll put my spin on that. Like I know that we as a company and in the product is much more solid now that we're a team of five people than when it was just me and Jonathan, and he was hacking away at stuff and I was doing marketing and support and trying to figure out how all the pieces fit together. Yeah. And if I had to do over again, either I would get a co-founder or if I had, you know, a couple $100,000 that I could go hire two or three people for the first, you know, year and a half or 2 years until we got to where the company could support them, I would definitely do that. I wouldn't just do it alone. I'm not a developer, so I can't, but yeah, I would definitely hire some people right from the beginning. Yeah. You know, the first thing on my list is really technical, but as a non-technical person, like I learned these things because I don't know any better, I guess, to begin with, is we had no real sense of like testing or a staging environment or anything like that for a while. At this point, we have a lot of both, and everything is automated. Everything is really buttoned up, and we're all much more confident in what we're building now. So I'm happy to ship stuff if it's kind of mildly human tested, because I know we have unit tests. I know we have a staging environment that the developers have gone around and punched all the buttons and stuff like that. And so like something like deploying something to production on Friday doesn't scare the shit out of me anymore because we have some kind of hard data around this. And I would say, like, I always heard, especially the Rails guys saying, oh, everything has to be unit tested. And I said, oh, you're full of shit. Just ship something and we'll figure out the bugs later. But yeah, I mean, if I was starting something new today, I don't know if I would have 100% unit test, but something like 70% on like the critical path stuff. And I know it would take longer to get started, but we see now that our speed of development is much faster because we're not worried about breaking stuff.
That's a big one.
That's just a like delayed gratification kind of thing.
Yeah. And I go even further, like I'm a Rails developer, so I've been on the testing train for quite a while, but with UserList, I tend to write even more tests than before, because from past experience, you always forget that one part and at some point it breaks in production and makes your life miserable. So these days when I work on a new feature, I really, really try hard to cover all the edge cases that I can think of.
Yeah.
Because as you said, like it makes things so much easier, and yeah, just having the confidence to deploy on a Friday afternoon and be somewhat sure that the system will not break.
is
a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And for the non-technical founders out there, what I would say is like, and I always kind of fight back this urge of myself to say, let's just ship it. Let's build it and ship it as fast as we can. The unit test is like an investment up front to be able to do that later on. So it's going to take 30% longer or 100% longer up front, but then every new feature is twice as fast or something later on, right?
Yeah, and I think in the end, I think it just speeds up the feedback loop about like the quality of your code and maybe even undiscovered issues.
Yeah.
Because like more often than not, I sit down and write a feature, add some tests for it, and then while writing the tests, I discover that, hey, my code actually is wrong and it's not doing the correct thing. And I notice that the very moment I write the tests and not like a week later when a customer complains about this weird behavior.
Right. So do you want to go with something else from your list?
Yeah. So one thing that ties a little bit into having testing for me is keeping the dependencies of the application, like all the libraries you use, up to date. And these days I use a service for that called Depfu, And they basically, whenever there's an update of a library, they update it and then run the tests. And if everything goes well, they just create a pull request in GitHub and I can just upgrade that dependency with one click. And compared to previously, where I'd basically ignore dependency updates for a couple months and then sit down and try to figure out like how to upgrade everything to the latest versions to get security fixes and new features and stuff, I basically do this in smaller increments almost every week. And that helped a lot to keep like the system, well, for one, stable and upgraded and secure. And that's a big one for me, because like now it's like less of a pain than it was before.
Yeah. So it's funny. We learned this lesson very much the hard way. We were kind of two versions of Laravel behind at one point. And yeah, it took a couple of weeks to upgrade everything.
Yeah.
Because we have, you know, integrations and all this, the dependencies, all this kind of stuff. And now we try to, whenever new release comes out, we wait, you know, a month or two, and then we upgrade to it. We want to make sure it's stable to have another kind of sub point release. But yeah, once something comes out, we have it planned for maybe the next dev cycle to take a look at it. And we end up updating a couple times a year at this point. So PHP and Laravel versions a couple times a year. I don't know about like all of our smaller packages and stuff like that. I don't know how often the guys update that stuff. But yeah, I mean, because you hear stories about people running versions of Rails or whatever that are 5 years old, and it's literally like rewriting the whole application to update at that point. Whereas you could have just taken whatever, a couple of weeks, three times a year. And fast and secure and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like upgrading gets harder the longer you wait, because with small upgrades, you kind of have a limited scope or a limited set of changes you have to make. And it's pretty clear usually, because there's a change log and they outline breaking changes and stuff like that. So small version jumps or like incremental version jumps are much easier than trying to, I don't know, upgrade a 2-year-old system to the most recent versions, because then there's so many things that change that you have a hard time figuring out, untangling what you actually have to do.
Yeah. We'll include a link to that service you mentioned. I might have to recommend it to our guys. Is that a Rails only thing, or is that everybody?
I think Depfu does Rails or Ruby and JavaScript, but I think there are other services out there. I think it was Dependabot or something that got acquired by GitHub. So they might do PHP as well. I'm not entirely sure. I have to look it up.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Okay. Yeah, the next thing like on my end was we started, so I read the Traction book, which is all about kind of like how to, not the marketing book, but the kind of how to run your business book a year ago at this point, I guess. And I've been preaching about it on the podcast here, but well, the one big thing we took away was we have regular weekly meetings. So we have a meeting 9 o'clock Eastern time every Monday, and they're about an hour long usually. And it's just amazing how helpful it is to get everybody on the same page with all the stuff that's going on. So, you know, marketing knows about a product release that's coming out, and support knows about a bug fix that's getting patched. And I talk about, you know, higher level strategic things, and I can tell everybody is happy knowing what everyone else is doing. Everybody feels kind of more cohesive with like that we're all on the same page and we're all going in the same direction. I talked to several people at MicroConf Europe about this, one of whom was Kevin McCardle from SureSwift, who, you know, runs a very, very large business that has several kind of smaller components. And he said they got big on the Traction and the EOS, the Entrepreneur Operating System, kind of bandwagon earlier last year in 2019. And he said it's amazing how kind of transformative it was for their productivity and efficiency. So yeah, I think if you haven't read the book, read the book. At the very minimum, just schedule a weekly meeting where people just talk about what they're doing. It doesn't have to be like a stand-up, but just to get people on the same page. It's super helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely true for remote teams where there's no water cooler where you can pick up on those things by accident, I guess. So you have to kind of force it by just having a call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we do that as well. And one thing we also started doing, I think a year ago or so, is like we start the call with a fun fact question. So we have a list of like just random weird questions. What's your favorite animal? What's your favorite food? Stuff like that. And usually start the call with that to just also get to know each other a little bit better.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. You and Jane know each other pretty well, right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we haven't met that many times.
Okay.
Maybe 5 times or so. So, and yeah, we work a lot together, but like outside of work, we don't really know each other that much. So
yeah, I can that, see that.
That question or that fun fact at the beginning of each call helps a little bit with that. You just like, sometimes interesting stuff occurs and someone has a fun story to share and then can basically talk about stuff that usually gets not talked about in a business context, and that helps with like just getting to know each other a little bit better.
Yeah, no, that's cool. We do that on Slack every Friday morning. We just have a fun Friday question, we call it. And I found out that one of our guys is a classically trained bakery chef.
Nice.
I was like, oh, okay, we're getting an Airbnb at our next meeting and you're cooking.
Yeah, but I see this is exactly why I like this, because you learn things that you never had imagined about your team and your co-founders.
Yeah, yeah.
One more technical thing, and then I think I'm done with technical things on my side. I'm usually building monoliths, like just like having all the code in one application and not breaking it out into like microservices or stuff like that. But what I learned over the years is that usually it makes sense to at least prepare to break things apart. So these days I'm still writing like monoliths that just do everything, but I already put some breaking points in there. So if the need arises, I can break the application up into smaller parts. And usually that happens because like one part needs more performance than another part and I need to scale it on multiple servers or stuff like that. But from experience, trying to build separate applications, like separate microservices from the start is a bad idea and just makes your life harder than it has to be, especially in the beginning.
So you kind of come at a like a monolithic approach and then break it up later? Is that what you guys are doing?
Yes. So yeah. User list at this point is still a monolith, but I know that some parts are likely to be performance critical, like for example our endpoint that receives data from all our customers to basically to process it into our system. That part gets a lot of traffic, and at some point we probably have to break it away into its own tiny little application that just does that processing part. So it's already prepared for that, like it has its own subdomain and the code is also kind of isolated from everything else, but for now it's just runs as part of the main application. But in theory it wouldn't take a lot of time to break it out into its own microservice.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. We have a similar thing that we'll do sometime this year, which is to break our analytics processing and data out into their own application and database, because it's part of the main application now and it's just enormous. I mean, hundreds of times the size of the rest of the database, and it's just like, okay, this is this is silly. So yeah, I hear you. You know, from a marketing perspective, the one thing that we are just getting, I've been chatting about it on the podcast here too much, I know everyone's rolling their eyes, is like tracking and attribution. You know, I feel like we've done a decent amount of that. When Denise came on board with us, she really brought a lot more savviness to how we do tracking and data reporting and stuff like that. And it's cool because now like it's much easier for us to get a good sense of like what's working well, what's a problem, where people are coming from, all that kind of stuff. And it's not super hard to set up. Most of it's like Google Analytics. Now we have Amplitude, and we're managing all of it with Google Tag Manager. So that's the other thing, is I was asking our developers to, hey, go insert this JavaScript snippet on every page before. And so it's just like, oh, it's so silly. Either use Segment, right? Or use Google Tag Manager to be able to manage all of your data connections. yeah, it's something I wish I would have done from the beginning, because then I could have done all this stuff by myself instead of having to bug the developers to insert this one line of code and then do a whole new deployment. So it's it's much nicer now.
Yeah, that's also a good point. And I think we're not doing a super great job with that. Like, we have been, like, I think we had Google Analytics on the website basically forever, but that's about it. And I don't think we do a good job of like attribution and proper tracking, like what channels work best for in terms of signups. So I guess that's something we have to work on.
Yeah, I think it only, I mean, it's really important once you, I think once you have product market fit, because then all you, not all, the most important thing is just getting more users, right? And so if that's your biggest focus, then having all that stuff and being able to double down on the thing that's working becomes much more important. At the beginning, you're trying to figure out so much stuff that that's not the biggest problem, you know?
Yeah, that's true. One other part for me that I'm doing differently compared to previous projects is like trying to build more in public, just be more open about what we're working on, what struggles we have. And I think it works particularly well for this product because like people interested in like following along are also kind of in our target audience for like potential customers. But even if that wasn't the case, I think just talking about it is a good way to also sometimes get outside feedback and get new ideas and yeah, just have more fun in the process.
Yeah. Has your podcast been a big part of that?
The podcast is definitely also a part of that. But even before the podcast, I tried to be more open about what I'm working on Twitter, and sometimes just sharing thoughts or code samples or stuff I'm working on, and not just like trying to build it and then ship it and then basically tell people after the fact. And I think like just allowing people to follow along also helps a little bit with the marketing. Mm-hmm. But I don't have hard numbers on that.
No, I agree. And I think you nailed it. I think especially the fact that people who kind of know and follow you are your potential customers, that's really helpful. Like a couple of the tiny seed customer companies are not in that respect at all. One is like legal tech and the other is like daycare center management. I'm like, you know, none of those people follow any of us on Twitter. None of those customers. So that doesn't work. But yeah, I think you guys are in a cool opportunity. I think we probably are too, where we have customers who are our customers because they know me, and that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Do you want to give a shameless plug for your podcast while we're at it?
Absolutely. The podcast is called Slow and Steady. It's together with my friend Brian Ray, and we do it weekly. Basically talking about what happened in the last week or so. I guess it's similar to this podcast in a way. And it's at slowandsteadypodcast.com or in all the usual podcast players, channels, stores, cool. Whatever.
Yeah, it's a great show. I listen to it. It's great to be able, I love these shows that people are able to kind of follow along with what we're all doing every week or whenever that you guys publish to see kind of what's going on. I love it. Yeah.
I think the most important ones we covered, the other ones are mostly related to the fact that now we have a co-founder situation.
Yeah.
So one thing we are doing differently is like we have a lawyer, we have legal paperwork, we probably incorporated the company. That's all stuff that I didn't do when I was like just on my own because it wasn't really necessary. But now that we have like three people working on this, it's really helpful and good that we have a shared agreement where we talked about various situations and like, what if someone wants to leave and what if someone gets hit by a bus and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Already figured out before. And I'm really glad that we have this in place.
Yeah. I heard Jane talking on Startups for the Rest of Us about this, where, you know, that was already kind of agreed upon ahead of time. And Claire wanted to kind of change her role within the company. And so it wasn't any drama or anything, because you guys had already decided that ahead of time. Yeah. When everyone had cool heads and it wasn't dramatic or anything. Yeah. That's kudos to you guys. I mean, I'm a single person LLC, I guess. So there's none of that, but yeah, I think anyone who has co-founders especially should have who has equity, who has kind of decision-making rights and what happens when somebody wants to leave? Because that is 100% guaranteed to be dramatic. Even if you have it all figured out ahead of time, I'm sure it was still kind of touchy, right? But the fact that you guys had that figured out ahead of time has cut down on that stress a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, it just aligns everyone with what to expect and how things are probably going to play out. So yeah, just like having, and I think it doesn't have to be like a fully legal compliant lawyer checked document, but like just some notes that get everyone on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. I have two things that we did very poorly that we still are doing one of them poorly, and we changed one already. The one we changed was the name of the product. I know you guys went through, you didn't change the name, but you changed your domain. I'm sure that was like mildly painful. But, you know, we started out, Castos was originally called Seriously Simple Hosting because of the plugin was called Seriously Simple Podcasting, still is called Seriously Simple Podcasting. And so we didn't have a good name for the hosting aspect, and so we just called it Seriously Simple Hosting, which is a terrible name. and so we had to like rebrand everything, you know? And that was just a pain. And so, like, the thing I learned from that is like, just pick a good name from the beginning and go with that. We've done that well with Podcast Motor, I guess. Podcast Motor has always been Podcast Motor. I think it's a great name and it will always be Podcast Motor. But, you know, I think you guys had a good strategy actually with like, if you like the name UserList, and UserList.com is whatever it is, too expensive and you can't get it or whatever, get that .io and then plan to just move the domain, but not the name, because the name is harder to change later on. So
I guess you're right about that.
Yeah,
just changing the domain wasn't that big of a deal, especially because like the name itself didn't change, so we didn't have to change a lot of things, basically setting up a redirect, and now whenever we see the IO domain somewhere, I just like replace it with a .com and that's it.
Yeah The other technical thing that we just didn't consider it, and now that the app is growing and we're able to kind of address this, is like how users and accounts are set up. So originally like a user was an account, and now we have a concept of like, I'd say like podcasts, you know? So like if you think of user list or, you know, drip, to say like a user is part of an account, and an account can have several domains that it has an email address for or email list for. We didn't have any of that shit. We just had like a user was an account was a podcast. And so we took the first step to that, which is say like users can have multiple podcasts. And that was kind of painful. And then we redid how that worked about a month ago. And now we're going to say like multiple users can be part of an account, and an account has multiple podcasts. But of course, like this is a month of work for a developer to do at this point, because I mean, a ton of shit has to be tested, and RSS feeds that if they break, someone's podcast just goes away and all this kind of stuff. So I would say like, I can't imagine it's much more work to do this right ahead of time, like to begin with. And I blame myself for just saying, nope, a user has an account, has a podcast, go, let's build it, you know? and Jonathan in the back of his mind is probably like, well, that doesn't make much sense, but whatever he says, because that was like the first thing he built probably. But I would say like future-proof that in your app maybe is what I would try to do next time.
Yeah. But I guess it's also one of those things where you have to be careful to not just over-engineer it from the start. Just like,
yeah.
Thinking back, I can point at least a couple of times where I spent most of my time setting up a project and building stuff like authentication, password reset, user permissions, I don't know, what else? Like all the stuff that isn't the core of the product, and focus on everything but the core of the product, and as you can guess, not get anywhere with the product in the end.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I hear you and I kind of agree that you have to at least somewhat think about it, but when in doubt, just go with the simplest solution and ship the core of the product and the part that actually is unique to your business, and not like stuff that's auxiliary to that and just like nice to have, I guess.
Yeah. You know, something like this makes me think of is I think that probably for both of us, our confidence in what we're building has grown so that if you were starting something new today, having kind of seen the path you've been on and the success you guys have with the user list and kind of the path we've been on and where we are with Castos, I would say now, I'm not going to start something new unless I'm really sure that it's going to work. And so I'd have the confidence to say, let's take 2 extra weeks and set this up the way that we're going to want it in 5 years, because I'm not as worried that like no one will come sign up for this thing, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I think that you're right. That plays a big role in like making those trade-offs, because like, as I said, like when you're just starting out and have no idea, you can waste a lot of time on that stuff that doesn't really matter. But if you're in a spot, as you said, like very confident that this is going to work and people are going to use it, then sure, like you can probably afford to spend some time on like setting up proper permissions and relationship between users and accounts and stuff like that. Yeah,
it's a fantastic form of procrastination though, right? Like when you're just starting, if you don't know if it's going to work, then over engineer the hell out of that thing. Yeah, I mean, it's the same way with all the marketing stuff and attribution. When you don't have any customers, you're like, well, just go get some customers. That's all that matters right now.
Yeah,
you got to pay the bills. Are you taking any of these things like that we've talked about or maybe that you don't want to talk about here kind of and implementing them with user list like this year, you think?
I think we will definitely have to do a better job with the attribution and in our tracking and analytics. But I guess that's about it. I feel like we're pretty on a similar path and have similar ideas. So
that's awesome.
Not sure what else to adapt.
That's great. No, I mean, I think that's the mark of like a really mature team, right? I mean, you guys, this is not your first rodeo, so that's awesome that the stuff that you and Jane and Claire have learned from your previous products or consulting engagements have carried over to this, where you're doing most of the stuff right the first time. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I think that's also one thing I should mention, that it's not like that we are geniuses and making things the right way from the start. All of this we learned the hard way, I guess. Making a lot of mistakes along the way and then just like learning from things that didn't work in the past and now trying to make them better. So it's not like we are in any kind special or know some secret stuff. We just learned it the hard way.
I've worked with both of you guys. You're both pretty wonderful. So give yourself some credit.
Yeah, but we've been doing this for quite a long time. So I think everything that I'm kind of doing right now, I did wrong in the past. So.
Yeah, fair point. Cool. So Benedict, can you share with folks where they can kind of learn more about you and UserList and what you guys are up to?
Yeah, so UserList is userlist.com, and we're also on Twitter at UserList, and myself, I'm on Twitter as Benedict Dyker, and that's about it. If you're interested in the podcast, it's slowandsteadypodcast.com. And we're always happy about new listeners.
Awesome. Awesome. It's great to chat. Thanks so much, Benedict. And happy new year to you and to everybody listening.
Happy new year to you as well.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.